Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
It's the Drink Talking with the Thinking Drinkers, Ben McFarland and Tom Sandon, and Mistress of Wine, Sam Capon. All the booze news and views, from absinthe to Zinfandel. Popping your cork since July 2017.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to It's a Drink Talking. I'm joined, as ever, by my lovely teammates, Sam Capel, Master of Wine, Mistress of Wine. How are you doing?
Very well, very well. You?
I'm doing very well. And Tom, you're wearing a scarf indoors. I'm wearing a hat indoors, but that's because my hair is in a terrible state. But talk me through the scarf.
I just forgot to take it off, to be honest.
Oh, all right. Nice. You're wearing it in a cool way.
Very French.
I just tied it like that. And
nice.
That's,
yeah. It's good.
That's it, yeah.
Very,
not a fashion choice. It's pretty nippy.
Well, that
no, says the woman with three cherries on her. You look like a fruit machine.
Ding, 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 ding,
jackpot. They are across her breasts. Listen.
Yeah,
how seedy.
Yes. So anyway, let's move swiftly on because I'm hosting it. It's the good week, you lucky people, and my spit or swallow is as follows. So my spit this week is regarding the purchase of Dark Star Brewery by the Fuller's Brewery. Dark Star Brewery in Sussex.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we're in Sussex, you know.
The Dark Star originated in Brighton, and it's in Partridge Green. I imagine that's quite near where you live. Must be. I think it's near Grinstead.
Yeah. I don't think it's a million miles from me. I think it's about 20 minutes.
You shouldn't really give your address out, Sam.
I haven't.
No. There'll be some, I imagine you'll get some stalkers on
this. Yeah. So. I'm more worried about you.
Yeah.
You should be. Those cherries. Oh, those cherries.
Low-hanging fruit.
that's not very polite.
Sorry, I wasn't talking about the...
I was sexualising her.
Come on, it happens. All of us, gravity gets a grip.
What an unpleasant man. What's wrong with him? Carry on.
Oh dear, I've taken it too far. Anyway, the Dark Star Brewery in Sussex was recently bought by the Fuller's Brewery in Chiswick, which strangely connects two rather big periods of my life, because I grew up in Chiswick and I went to university in Sussex and drank Dark Star when I was a student.
When did they launch this?
Mid-90s.
Really? They've been around that long?
Yeah, but they started off at the Evening Star pub in Brighton, which is, if you come out of the station, it's quite a sort of granddaddy looking pub there, but it's actually really good. They were quite sort of pioneering in their time. Their brewer at the time was a guy called Mark Tranter, who's moved on to Burning Sky. We've talked about
Burning
him.
Burning Sky, great business.
So they were bought 100% by Fuller's. And whenever a big brewery or a bigger brewery buys a smaller brewery,
uproar.
There seems to be a level of uproar and criticism and sort of
consolidation.
Well, it was just, it's this idea
lack
that,
of identity.
That these big bad breweries are going around, you know,
snuffling
up the little ones just to shut them down and all that kind of stuff. And there has been a lot of history of that. And to be fair, there wasn't as much uproar with this purchase because Fuller's have a track record of doing the right thing, really.
I tend to think of Fuller's as an original craft brewer, I suppose.
So and don't they have their own pubs? Is that right?
They
could probably maybe just wanting it to, and actually they can aid distribution.
It wasn't a hostile takeover. It wasn't like they just came along and said, right, we're putting a bid in and your shareholders they're going to sell it from underneath you. They had one owner, and he obviously was like, yeah, go on then.
Yeah. Yeah, show me your money.
Because Darkstar found themselves in a position where it's a really tricky sort of middle ground in which they operate. They've been around for ages, so they don't have the sort of benefit of being a new cool kid on the block. They don't do these wacky craft beers. I mean, they were one of the first people to do American-style fruity, aromatically hopped IPAs.
I'm not sure I've ever had one. I'm going to dig one out. Are they relatively widely available?
Yeah, hop. Well, no, round your way. They'll be everywhere. Yeah. Hophead is their big one. Sunburst is another one.
Oh, they must
one.
It in my local pub.
They did an espresso stout, which I remember drinking, but I don't know if that's still part of their locker. But anyway, they're really good beers. Mm-hmm. If you go to the Harp in Covent Garden, it's a kind of unofficial sort of tap house in the capital, and then you can get loads of their beers. So they've been around for a long time. They've got a good solid footing, but how they grow is difficult because there's huge competition in the market. There's so many new brewers coming along. People are coming into pubs looking at Darkstar, Hophead, thinking, that's a good beer, but I haven't tried that. I'll have that instead. And so it's just the shock of the new means it's sort of becoming increasingly difficult for brewers like that of a certain size and a certain age to keep going and or indeed grow. So they were looking at crowdfunding. They were looking at lots of different options, investment, getting private investors. But then when Fuller's come along, they know the business, know how to grow a business, have probably made all the mistakes that they were about to make, it makes sense. And Darkstar Hophead is a lovely, really nice, fruity, pale ale, real easy to drink, sort of 3.8%. You'll like it, Tom. It's kind of that very easy drinking.
No, I do. I know they're a bit, well, I've been down to Brighton.
Yeah.
Fairly regularly in my life. They are the go-to beers down there.
Yeah,
part of the world.
Along with Harvey's.
They don't make it that far up in, I'm now north of London. You don't see them. So, like you say, in terms of a reach, if you want to achieve the reach.
But what they give Fuller's is a beer that, from a flavour profile, they don't really cover with their beers. So they've got Pride, they've got lots of different beers, but
Chiswick. You like Chiswick, don't you?
Well, that's quite exciting as well.
Because they think that all. That'll help preserve it.
I don't know if it is connected, but Fuller's are also apparently building a sort of pilot brewery as well where Chiswick will be brewed on.
Right.
Because it has to be served fresh. So they had a trouble with the sort of the big production. Some of it wasn't being drunk fresh, so it has been saved. So Chiswick Bitter, which was under threat, is going to be saved.
Yay. Everyone,
I know that probably doesn't matter to the vast majority of listeners. So this is the reason it's a spit.
Yes, why is this your spit? That's exactly what I was going to ask.
It's because
you're spitting at the hoo-ha, not at the takeover.
Yeah, I'm spitting at the hoo-ha, and also I'm a bit worried that I don't care about it as much as other people, because there seems to be this idea that, and I know people get attached to breweries and beers and the people that make them, but the vast majority of people that get bought or that get sold or taken over, they're doing it by choice. And there's some hostile takeovers. I remember there's a beer writer much more mature than us who's been around for years called Roger Protz, and he's a brilliant writer, very passionate about the industry. And I remember once reading his thoughts that when you lose a brewery that you're affiliated with, it's like losing a member of your family. It's not. It's not. Unless that member of the family is a complete dickhead, I wouldn't be that bothered. I mean, I think of the beers that I like drinking, and I think, well, if it was taken over by someone, I would probably be a bit disappointed. And it might be says more about me than anyone else, but I just don't really invest in
that
the breweries emotionally in it.
Yeah.
I like the flavour of the beer. I like drinking it. If a bad brewery changed it and made it a much less flavoursome beer, I'd just drink something else. It's not something.
There's enough different beers out there to.
And also, all these people who are sort of up in arms about these purchases, do they buy stuff from Amazon? Do they wear Nike trainers?
Do they go shopping in their
local
stores? Do they go shopping?
I mean, it's this idea that big corporations are bad, which might be valid, but it's no worse than in other things than beer. And most people are in this to make money. And if someone's invested, put their house on the line, their livelihoods on the line to build a business and build a brewery, and at the end of it, they want to sell it, they are not sellouts.
Why the hell not?
There we go.
Well, lucky him. He's got the cash in his pocket.
Yeah.
He's carrying on.
I'm jealous.
I don't imagine.
So are you as well.
Yes.
We're trying to shut you down.
All right, no. Well, I feel very passionate about this.
Yes.
So, all right, the next one.
What's your next one?
Chinese New Year. It's a year of the dog. Again. Not even sure that's the right country.
Kung Fu, yeah, that's a good question.
It's
where
the,
did it originate?
I think it might have.
Hong Kong?
Hiya!
Hong Kong Fu was a Kung Fu expert, wasn't he?
So a Great Dane walks into the pub, right?
Yeah.
Says, I'll have a pint of lager and a packet of crisps. Bartender says,
why the big pool?
Yes. Thank you very much.
You can actually hear jokes like that in our show at the Underbelly in London on the 14th of April. We've actually got a joke of that nature in our show.
But it involves a wolf. So there we go. So it is our joke. Anyway, this was sent to me by Sam, thankfully, because I had nothing else. There's a place in Portland, in Oregon.
Love that place.
Fido's. Mm. It's a new place that's opened. It's both a tap room and a dog shelter. So it's like Bassy Dog's home. The founder is called Scott Porter.
Oh,
see? Look at that.
Nice.
He's a local business owner and dog lover, and he came up with the idea when he visited a cat cafe called Purrington's. Mm. And so basically he's done the same thing for dogs, but with beer.
I think there's one in London, a cafe, you can basically go and pet cats while you drink your tea.
Yeah.
Cats,
it's a bit random.
It's
almost a shit gold donut.
So he's so it's basically a big drinking hall,
right,
and there's loads of sort of poor old little doggies knocking about. But they
can you take one home with you? Or do you just give, I wonder if you just give money to help fund?
No. It's not like, no, I mean, if you want to actually take a dog, it's more than just going, I'll have that one, and walking home, shit face, get home, and you've got to wake up in the morning with a leash in your hands and someone licking your face, which has happened to me before, but not with a dog. Anyway, this place, it's like a big drinking hall, and it's got 40 rotating taps serving beer, wine, and cider, but it's got canine artwork, and it shows dog films.
Okay.
Plays dog videos. Stuff like The Beagle Has Landed, Donnie Barco, Bridge Over the Rover Kwai, Star Paws, Much Ado About Nothing. So carry on. There will be Bloodhound, Bitches of Eastwick,
101 Dalmatians.
And Three Men and a Little Rabies. Yeah. That was. And they've got food, dog food,
to chow
dog
down
themed
on.
Food dishes to chow down, including chicken boodle soup, kimchi wawa, deep fried cauliflower, quarter hounds with cheese, and smoked salmon and cream cheese beagles.
We also use those in our show.
Yeah.
Just to, again, give you an indication of the sorts of comedy you
would
expect to find if you go onto our show. Oh, Ben, I can't believe you trawled those out.
Yeah, I know. I think all good pubs should have a fire,
and a dog,
snacks, and a dog. Welcome, and a dog. But if you've got loads of dogs in there.
I was in the Nero this morning, having a coffee.
We don't need another Nero.
I don't know, I don't mind Neros. Costas, they're the ones.
We've got one in our village now.
We've got two Costas in our town. What the hell's that?
We've got a tiny village, you've got one. They're taking over the home counties.
Yeah.
I've got a question for you two.
Go on then.
Do you turn up to the podcast together? You always turn up at the same time. Do you meet en route?
No, we bumped into each other.
We did just bump into each other today. Last time we were in the cafe working before we came here.
Yeah.
Because it was an afternoon session.
Right. Some of us have got jobs, Sam.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, always working.
Excellent, well done. You're hosting, I'm taking
over. Oh, yeah. Jesus Christ.
Probably because he's not getting on with it, Sam.
Dogs and takeovers. That's that licked.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Yo,
You're listening to It's the Drink Talking.
Right, we're doing a tasting now, and
can I just comment on the bottle?
So we've recently come back from Mexico. I don't know if listeners know this, but we're pretty big deals in the drinks world. and Tom's going to talk through
tequila,
etc.
Yeah, and in fact, we've talked about tequila on our show already. But what you'll find with us generally is we like to repeat ourselves, and also with all these spirits categories, there are areas you can explore beyond just the standard. And now we're going to start going into tequila variations. So we're going to have Blanco today, and then we'll probably jump up to Añejo, because I think we had a Reposado in 19. So you can move around the categories and learn a bit more. So you lucky listeners, it's time for us to get a bit more into tequila. And yes, as Ben said, we've come back from Mexico. We went there with Cask Liquid Marketing and Ocho Tequila. So we had the Ocho Reposado, and now we're going to have the Ocho Blanco. So in that podcast, Sam, we actually convinced you that tequila
wasn't heinous.
Yeah, it's nice. We used Ocho in that instance, and we used an aged 8 weeks and 8 days aged tequila, the Ocho that we tried there. And now this is not aged in any way. So now we've got you interested in tequila. We've taken away the cover of aging and got to the basics.
I have to admit, I did have, I might have mentioned this before, a coffee tequila.
Yeah, that would not be a tequila in the sense that it's probably a very low ABV and it's been flavoured. So a form of agave spirit. If you are buying agave spirit, yeah, others are available. Cascabel do a very nice coffee tequila. But if you're buying agave spirits, here is what we would say. If you want to know that you're getting agave spirits, buy 100% agave tequila.
Oh, look, this bottle has it on it.
It has to have it on there.
Tequila, what's
Ocho,
that called?
Ocho, yeah.
100% para de agave.
Yeah, they're using agave.
And it's also engraved with his name on it.
Yeah, it's got my name on it. That's very nice of the distillery.
Thank you for coming to visit
that.
Us, it says, Tom Sandham.
Ben's got one as well. It's a beautiful distillery. And we've talked about Carlos Camarena, the distiller, on previous podcasts as well. So tune into The Legend of Liquor to hear more about Carlos. And he makes this. Now, as we've said before about Ocho, they use agaves from single fields. They're the only people that do this. They're the first people to actually write on a label of the clear terroir of the agave plants. And what is stunning, and the reason we're bringing it back in is because now we've actually tasted these next to each other, the same product from different fields is remarkably different. Now we got the Las Aguias Plateau or Blanco tequila with us today, and that comes from a very high part of the region that they operate in, whereas if you taste it next to something that comes from slightly lower appellation, it's an entirely different spirit. So it really makes a huge difference. We're lucky to have the Aguias because that comes very high, and as a result there are a lot of sugars in there. So this was very sweet tequila, and we were drinking this responsibly excessively.
Yeah. So I've got a question. It's a bit of a silly one, really. But before doing this podcast, my pretty much own experience of tequila, and a lot of people's experience of tequila, is doing shots of shit tequila in the pub with salt and lemon.
Yeah.
And it's so weird because I smell this and I have to really like try and shut those memories down.
Yes.
Like, and part of me thinks that actually, I don't know why that you have salt and lemon with it, because I don't think it does any favours. Like, I can almost, if I'm smelling this, I'm trying to smell the tequila and enjoy it, but I'm literally battling back memories of...
Our olfactory memory is... So at the top of our nose, you can actually touch your brain, which is why scent and aroma is so closely linked to memory. And tequila is a perfect example of this. It attaches itself to those memories, and we really have got to cleanse the entire population,
an entire generation,
to get rid of that idea. Now, when I smell it, because we've just come back from there, Ben will be the same.
You've got a great memory of it.
We are getting the memories of great Mexican food, being in a toilet for half an hour.
See, I've got a memory of my friend Rachel barfing on my shoes.
It's a very unfortunate reality of what we're up against here. But you've had bad tequila. And when we talk about the big producers and what they actually did with tequila in the 80s and the 90s, there have been spells where they have used anywhere up to about 20% agave sugars in their product. So 20%. So 80% of it would not have been agave. It would have been sugarcane potentially.
And is that legal?
It's legal. You can call yourself a tequila mixto with 51% agave sugars. There were times where the rest of it would have been other agaves other than blue agaves. Now it's just pure sugarcane.
I mean, our advice, I think I'm right saying, Tom, would be if you want to taste the best tequila, there's a couple of exceptions to this rule, but avoid mixto tequila. Always go for 100% agave
and
tequila.
And to drink straight. It's not like whiskey. We put water in.
When it comes to spirits, what I would say is this. Spend a bit more money. Learn a bit about what you're drinking. And then, in the first instance, try it neat. Mm. Because that is where everything is. That's the essence of what this is.
Come on,
let's have a go on this. So La Aguias means the eagles. And actually, they've recently seen Carlos again, back to his biodiversity. They've actually seen these very rare eagles starting to circulate around the agave fields again for the first time in a long time. 257 metres above sea level, so it's a very high altitude, and because of that, they've got lots of lovely, rich, sweet agaves. And we compare this to the La Rivera. That might be something I've tasted before, but that was 1,650 metres above sea level. Brown soil versus this rich red soil. And it's just incredible. Just completely different tequilas when you try them next to each other. So it really works. It's also very important to talk about terroir in tequila to give it the same reverence and appeal as wine. They've been inspired by that idea that you take grapes from different fields and you're going to have a different wine.
Well, as you're saying, how important the altitude is.
Yeah.
That is a component of terroir.
Yeah.
How hard the climate, all the environment.
I mean, as you're travelling through the region, just as you do when you drive through Bordeaux or in other wine-growing regions, you've got rows and rows of this blue agave of different sizes, growing at different stages. They're all being used for different tequilas. It's not until you go there and just see how long these agaves take to grow and to harvest, and the way they are harvested and produced, the actual distillate. It's incredible that it's then being dismissed elsewhere.
It's clearly a massively artisan, historical product. Yeah.
Especially Ocho, because in terms of the production, he does use stainless steel distilling as well as copper, and he uses a slightly different method of crushing the agaves, not the Tohono stone, for this, because he's looking for a very clean and honest expression of the agave itself. But they're all still very traditional, and I think what you end up with is something that you're sipping that.
You know, I am battling slightly against my historical memories, but if you have little baby sips, you know, I'm not retching. It's okay.
Ringing endorsement.
I'm being serious. I literally cannot drink tequila. No. I cannot drink it. And it really makes me feel I really do not like it at all. However, I am literally sitting here sipping it.
You're doing it.
You know, it's got some nice sort of structure. It's got some nice texture. I do struggle to find flavours. I might be able to add a pop, say, fennel or aniseed or something like that. A bit of white pepper in now, I think. Yeah, but
it's quite sweet. I find it, you know, there's a vegetal hit on it, but it's really rounded. The mouth feels, I mean, this is a blanco, you know, this is potentially the harshest expression of tequila. This is it without any wood cover at all. And yet, I find it rich. There's so much going on in there. It's incredible tequila. And, well, I mean, we were drinking this with seafood in a restaurant, and it went blindingly well with it. But then there you've got your salts coming off the food there
So why historically, when you do a shot in a pub or whatever, or nightclub, why historically
It is a ritual. I mean, the flavours that you combine it with are flavours that are present in Mexican food. So things like lime, you know, they've got lime, they put lime in their beer. So the reason that these ingredients have come together is not completely accidental. The ritual is something we have created in this country.
And interestingly,
we'd never see a Mexican. No one ever talks about that.
That's what I mean, I think. And also, interestingly, there's something I was reading once, and it's basically saying if you flavour balance your meal, then your wine will go better with a dish. And so if you think about a lot of things like red meat or anything like that, certainly in France and whatnot, they'll serve a sauce with it, for example. Right. And often that sauce will have in it, and will have salt in, and might have lemon in it.
Yeah.
The whole idea being that salt and lemon can soften wine.
Mm.
And if you have a meal and it has a steak that's seasoned, or you have something in it with lemon, then actually, generally, if the food is balanced, your wine will be improved. So maybe there's some kind of rationale. Yeah, well, I think every lemon mouthful, and salt will soften
every mouthful something. You want it to be different, don't you? You want to have a different flavour experience. So,
well, that was tasty. Thanks.
Yeah, introduce tequila.
And also, just a quick thing on the Blancos. Like you say, Tom, it's considered the sort of entry level style of tequila, and people often think that Reposado and Añejo are more complex and interesting because they've had aging, whereas Ocho tequila, because they're really trying to express the character of the different fields, they're not interested really in
pure,
aging it too much because
yeah,
yeah. overpowering
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
But they do have a Reposado.
They do, and an Añejo.
Yeah.
Go back to 19, because we talk about that a bit in there, and because they age it for 8 weeks and 8 days, as we saw, and the wood is quite old and tired, so they don't have massive influence, like you say, Ben. So it's a great producer. We've talked about them a lot. But what was interesting going away with the guys who took us was they're there representing Ocho, but actually they took us to another distillery. And so we're going to taste another tequila from the Fortaleza distillery, which is based in Tequila Town. And I thought...
Is it actually called Tequila Town?
Yeah.
Yes, it is, yeah. In fact, there's a discussion about what came first, the spirit or the town, which I have to say, I'll take my hat off to anyone who takes you away on a brand trip, and I'm afraid we do go on them.
And takes you to a competitor.
But then takes you to a competitor. It was amazing that they did that. And this is a fantastic tequila, and it will retail for about £60. So it's the sort of luxury end of it.
Quite different. They smell quite
different.
This is it. It's remarkable when you start tasting the different styles and variations.
Oh, so this is more vegetal. Different.
Okay. Mm. Well, we got to meet the creator of this as well, Guillermo Erickson Sousa. So Sousa might be a name that's familiar to you if you know anything about tequila. Sousa is one of the bigger brands. He's fifth generation, so his great-great-great-grandfather started the Sousa distillery. Well, more importantly, he was the first person to take tequila outside of Mexico to export it. So he took tequila to the world. Very, very important character in the history of tequila. But they actually sold the business. And I don't know how much you'll remember Guillermo, Ben, because...
Wasn't there?
He didn't make the sit down with Guillermo. He was sitting down, but he's more lying down on a bench, but then on a toilet.
No, that was on the Wednesday, I'd had food poisoning along with another guy on the trip, and I just passed out on a bench and kept getting woken up by the distillery dog licking my face, which is a real low point. But I was gutted because I know that these guys are very good and I wanted to go around and see it all. But if you've got food poisoning, you're feeling awful, a tequila distillery, I tell you now,
is not the place you want to be.
My word.
Well, Guillermo, who you didn't meet, is a really great guy. He's an American, but he's part of the Sousa dynasty. His father was Norwegian, in fact, and his mother was part of the Sousa family. And he was away at college when his grandfather decided to sell the Sousa distillery. Obviously, as the heir to the throne, Guillermo admits he was not seen as the natural successor when he was getting battered and chasing women in California. So they sold the distillery. He was pretty gutted about it, though, and they kept hold of one part of the distillery, an ancient part of it, and some of the land. And so more recently, he's gone back in the 90s, and he reinvigorated this old part of the Sousa distillery. He's got a boiler in there which dates back to 1903. He's resurrected this very small site. And again, this is a guy who's doing everything using very, very traditional techniques. Now, we've got a small sample of the Fortaleza today. If you see a bottle of this, I highly recommend buying a bottle of it.
It is tasty.
It's a beautiful bottle as well. They hand make the lids, which are the wooden agaves. Incredible. We saw them hand making the actual lids. But they use Tohono to crush the agave. They use stone ovens. They do all the traditional things. And when they first distilled this, it came off the still. They had a plan for it, but they tasted the tequila and they decided that they weren't going to do anything to it. So at 44, 46% came off the still and they bottled it and charged £60 for it. So it is it's a sort of luxury end of it. And bartenders do go crazy for this.
I can see why. It's very flavourful.
What we've noticed there is just how different they are. So if you think tequila's all the same, it's not true. That's great stuff. So that's Fortaleza and Ocho.
Both of them available on whiskeyexchange.com. So go out and start loving tequila again.
Nice one. Thank you, Tom. Now, Sam.
Yes.
This is a section called Legends of Liquor. It's your turn.
It
better be good. Otherwise, everyone is going to be very cross.
Okay, so my legend of liquor this week is a guy called Robert Parker.
Oh, he's the one with the scores. Scores on the doors.
Scores on the doors. Okay, so you know who he is.
Yeah.
Not related.
Tell me you're looking a bit blank.
Peter Parker?
No, Spider-Man.
Can I tell you what I think of him without knowing anything about it?
Yeah.
Does he not have an exaggerated hold on the wine industry? I mean, does he really know that much about it?
I think he does now. Yeah.
Oh, right, okay. Right.
That's fair to say.
Yeah.
That's why he's a legend, I imagine.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Should we listen to him?
Can I just tell you what I think about him? I reckon he's quite a legendary character in the world of wine.
Yeah. Well, he is, and I think he's quite a divisive character. So he's basically an American wine critic who was a lawyer originally, but got into wine and decided that there was no easy way to work out what people thought about wine.
Does he know what he's talking about?
Well, he does now, because that was in the 70s. He's basically 70 now and just sort of starting to retire. He's just sold his business for 15 million.
Okay.
So that would suggest he knows what he's doing.
Now, can I just say one thing? He could have sold it for a lot more had he done this, because him being a wine expert, I imagine he pours the wine, he gives it a swirl and he smells it and then gives his opinion.
Yeah.
He should have been called Nosy Parker.
That's good.
You know what? The thing that's silly, though, is let me go to the beginning. So basically, this guy, Robert Parker, is American. He was a lawyer, and then he started writing his own notes and critiques called The Wine Advocate, a bi-monthly magazine. And it was doing so well after a few years. In the early 80s, he quit law and went in to do this full time. But what's quite interesting is he's had a massive sort of amount of influence on styles of wine. And so famously, his palate likes kind of oak and alcohol and quite rich sort of supple wines. And he's been accused of making winemakers change the style of their wines to appeal to Parker and Parker's palate, and whether that's lead to sort of homogenisation of wine styles and whatnot. And, you know, if someone gets a high Parker mark, the price of their wine will go up, because people will buy wine according to what Parker has given it.
Really?
It is quite interesting. So, his nose and palate are insured for $1 million.
Nosy Parker.
Mm. But yeah, it's this whole 100-point scale, and he's particularly famous for rating Bordeaux wines. Bordeaux is his big thing. And yeah, and apparently it's led to a change in sort of viticulture and styles and techniques to provide these very kind of opulent styles of wines.
Does he have any stake, any skin in the wine game? Because I would have thought that if that was me, I'd open a vineyard, because all my
wines
would
sell. Because you've got to be really careful not to have a conflict of interest. And then, you know, I think he might be friends with so-and-so and so-and-so. But no, I mean, basically, Parker is arguably the most famous wine critic in the world, and particularly in America and Asia. According to a Bordeaux shipper, quote unquote, the difference between a score of 85 and 95 points for one wine is equivalent to 6 to 7 million euros. Like, they can charge so much more for their wine if they get a high Parker score, and it can multiply the price of a wine. However, having said that, 1 year Parker gave a very high score to one wine and all the other critics didn't, and that didn't affect, you know, like all the Jancis and all other critics did not give one wine a high score. He was the only one who did, and his high score, completely on his own, outside other critics, will not have as much influence.
That's just
extraordinary. So yeah, he's 70 now. He has sold the Wine Advocate. He's still in the wine game.
Is he a nice chap? Have you met
him? I've never met him.
Do you often agree with him? Are you in tune with his palate?
Bordeaux is not my area.
That's an oversight. Surely you should have really made that.
Well, now he's sold it.
My bread and butter is commercial level wines, and that's where I think it's interesting. What is interesting is I went to a tasting a couple of weeks ago of iconic white Bordeaux. So we're tasting white wines from Mouton, Margaux, some really snazzy wines. And it's just very interesting to suddenly be in that sort of arena and tasting sensational wines.
What did they think of you? I mean, did they ask you to leave? Did they just say, who's this scruffy cow?
It's just very interesting.
Did they say, more canapes, please?
It was a seminar.
Did you nick
any? No, I didn't. But it's just very interesting. That's not really, you know, I've never gone to Bordeaux and done the on-premier tastings or anything.
Really?
No, that's not kind of what I do. But just to finish, what's quite interesting is the Wine Advocate is Robert Parker. Robert Parker is the Wine Advocate. So then to sell it for $15 million to two blokes in Singapore.
Is his name Robert Parker?
No.
That's
what are you going to do with it? No one's going to be interested in the Wine Advocate unless you have someone whose palate you're following and you trust and they give you the scores.
May I suggest, Sam, that this is your opportunity to email them and say, look, Yeah. I'm the person behind the brand.
I work very closely with Aldi wines.
Yeah. Have you ever tried this?
Then to finish, interestingly...
Happy finish, come on.
Back in the box.
Literally, because he's so powerful, apparently two chateau owners offered him the sexual favours of their daughters to review their wines.
That's dowry territory.
And less happily, he has received death threats.
Oh. Really?
Yeah, because he's so powerful.
Wow.
What did he say to their offer?
He's a happily married
man. No, don't kill me.
Yeah,
don't
he's got.
don't shoot me.
He's got one daughter, so he. I think he's keeping his millions in the bank to look after his daughter, and you know he's now retiring.
And he's doing all right.
He's doing all right.
That's totally changed my view of him because I, for some reason, just thought. No. Don't like him.
I've never met him. I think he's got a bit of a reputation. Anyway, so that is my Legend Liquor. Without a doubt, a massive, massive legend, whatever people think of him. The one and only
Robert Parker. Nosy
Parker. Peter Parker.
Parker Penn. Right. Well done, everyone. I think we did that very nicely and swiftly. It's been one of the best ones ever. I'm sure everyone will agree. Thank you very much for listening. We're going to be doing more of the same again next week, where I'll be joined by Sam and Tom. And also, before I go, well done, Tom. He's given me the show.
be professional.
Yeah.
We've got some shows.
We've got some shows coming up. We've got the 15th of March. We're doing a sessions at the Museum of Comedy. 17th of March, Chipping Norton in the Cotswolds are doing our show there. And then on April the 14th as well, we are going to be playing the Underbelly in London on the South Bank. Please come along. It's a massive theatre, 400 people.
Philip.
Bring all your mates. Yeah, bring all your friends.
Your grannies, your colleagues.
Read all our stuff in there. We've written in the Telegraph recently. Read our stuff there. And Sam, what are you up to over the coming weeks?
You on the telly box?
Not on the telly box. I've got Edinburgh and I'm going on a little champagne trip.
Oh,
nice one.
Yeah, Verve Clicquot.
Madame Verve Clicquot. Nice one. All right, folks. Thanks for listening and see you next week. Bye.
See you later. Bye.
This was a Grand Cru podcast from 7 Digital.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.